6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth has never heard before.
Hello, and welcome to A Public Affair. It's Tuesday, so that means you've got me. I'm Carousel Baird. We have a great show lined up today. We are going to talk about the funding for the Bucks Arena in Milwaukee County. A conversation that, when you sort of look at the media, has gotten a lot of attention and detailed conversation in Milwaukee, which makes a lot of sense. The city council, the county board, the mayor and the county executive, plus the state legislature are really actively involved in it, and have been a lot of great conversations happening in Milwaukee County, but not so many here in Dane County. So I'm excited to have two of our guests today that are from Milwaukee, but obviously have a statewide appeal and interest in the public funding potential for the Bucks Arena. So we're going to get right to that. They are voting, actually, today. The Wisconsin State Assembly is voting on the bill. It is the only thing on the agenda for today's calendar. They started around 11, but they haven't quite gotten into session yet. I do have people texting me with updates. So if a vote happens while we're on the show today, we will let you know. Breaking news, always here on A Public Affair. So let's cut to our great chase. We have two fabulous guests with us today. First is Sachin Chetta. He is a partner with Nation Consulting. I got your name right, and then I beloved the easy part. Hey, Sachin, how are you today?
I'm great, Carousel. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Sachin is a partner with Nation Consulting in Milwaukee. As I said, he works primarily with corporate, labor, political, and nonprofit clients on strategic planning, management, messaging, and government and public relations. Some of the clients he's worked for is with Wisconsin AFL-CIO and Milwaukee Housing Authority. He's previously served as the director of the Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition, deputy director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, and outreach director for the film As Goes Janesville. And before all of this work with Nation Consulting, he also worked in the political arena, spent 5 years as an aide to Governor Jim Doyle, and has worked with Wisconsin Citizen Action, Congresswoman, now Senator, Tammy Baldwin, and the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, among many, many others. So it's a pleasure to have you here with us today, Sachin. And also joining us is Bob Connolly. Bob Connolly is one of the founders and currently on the board of directors for Common Ground, which is a bipartisan community grassroots group based in Milwaukee that focuses on issue campaigns that make a difference in the greater Milwaukee community, not just the city. It really makes great efforts to focus on the city and the county. Bob, are you with us today?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Bob. Thank you so much for joining us. And you are also the head of the Milwaukee Rising campaign that is part of Common Ground, which effort is to restore the housing market in Milwaukee neighborhoods. And that does tie into the conversation we're about to have about the Milwaukee Bucks funding. So stay tuned for that. I'm excited to sort of see how there's a couple different layers that go on with this conversation. So let's sort of start off, because I think it hasn't gotten as much coverage here in Madison as it has in the Milwaukee media world. Sachin, can you start off a little bit and just sort of tell us, what are we talking about? The state government wants to financially support the expansion or the building of a brand new Bucks Arena, and we're talking about $250 million?
Right. So what is being voted on in the State Assembly today is a bill for the state to provide a part of the financing for an arena and development package that we think is going to result in $1 billion or more of development in downtown Milwaukee, creating thousands of jobs and helping to drive a renaissance on the north side of downtown and help transform the northern side of Milwaukee's downtown and help create jobs in Milwaukee. And the owners of the Bucks are putting up $250 million. The they're asking a combination of the state and local governments to put up another $250 million to build the arena, and then the Bucks are the owners are pledging another $500 million of development in the surrounding area around where the new arena would be. And what the state is being asked to do is provide $80 million of the $250 million in public dollars, but basically by providing $4 million a year for 20 years to help underwrite the cost of building this arena, some of which they will get returned back to them in a ticket surcharge. So 50 cents on every ticket sold for the arena will come back to the state to help defray the cost. There are some other benefits to the state in terms of tax revenue generated. But overall, it's not a perfect deal. No political deal ever is. There's a lot of compromise that's taken place and a lot of different interests from left and right and from labor and from the owners. But it's the best deal we could get, and we think it's the best thing to go forward. And I'm not really representing any interest here. No one's paying me. I'm just a concerned citizen who is a little bit of a Bucks fan. I don't go to that many games a year. But more than anything, I'm really interested in the development and the job creation around Milwaukee.
Bob, I would think that your sort of description of what is before us would differ a little bit from what Sachin just said.
Oh, yes. We're Common Ground is opposed to any public subsidy for building a new arena, primarily for two reasons. One, the billionaire owners of the Bucks don't need the money. They can come up with the money themselves, and other billionaires who have built arenas have done the same thing in other parts of the country. And number two, we don't think that morally they deserve it, because one of the key owners of the Bucks is a man by the name of Wesley Edens, who is also the controlling owner of NationStar Mortgage, which owns hundreds of vacant, foreclosed, abandoned, deteriorating properties in Milwaukee. And he has not done anything to take responsibility for the rehabilitation and improvement and resale of those properties. So they don't need the money, they don't deserve the money, and they shouldn't receive public money. We're not opposed to a new arena. We're not opposed to a downtown economic development. All of that is good, but you don't need to subsidize people that can afford to do it themselves.
Sachin, what's sort of your thoughts and responses to some of the things that Bob just said? We can take it sort of piece by piece. First, the idea that these are individuals that can afford an arena themselves. Why are we providing public subsidies? And specifically, when you said that they're pledging an extra $500 million for other communities, clearly that money exists within their cash flow to put forth towards an extra $250 million in this arena that they're getting public funding for. So why is this an issue?
Yeah, so I think people understand that it's a little bit more complicated than that. So first of all, the owners as a whole, you know, are wealthy people, as the owners of sports teams always are. But in communities across the country, we've seen a partnership between private owners and the government in generating the resources required to do major developments, right? We're not talking about putting up a $20 million apartment building and then using some tax credits. We're talking about, you know, a $1 billion development that is going to transform Milwaukee and is going to accrue benefits to a lot of different people.
How is it going to transform Milwaukee?
Well, so you have a former freeway, a really ill-fated and badly planned freeway that was built 50 or more years ago that was called the Park East Freeway. And then a little bit more than a decade ago, it was torn down. And so there is a plot of vacant land, or a series of plots of vacant land, that kind of border northern Milwaukee, many dozens of acres of land that have laid empty for many years. And so you kind of you get off the freeway at the north edge of downtown, and you enter this little wasteland that not only is hard to develop because of the cost of developing it, but also really has hurt the neighborhoods just north of downtown, Haymarket and Bronzeville, in terms of their ability to grow, because we haven't kind of filled in the gap. And if you look at a map, you'll see the kind of just this vacant land on Google Earth. And so what this is an opportunity to transform that land using the arena as an anchor, but also building a Bucks practice facility that'll get a lot of usage, to build a hotel hotel and apartments and other office buildings. And so the idea is to really change the nature and the character of the northern part of downtown. And, you know, when it comes to other things that the city needs, it's not an either-or proposition. I mean, I'm an advocate for spending more money on schools and for spending more money on healthcare and for spending more money on the university. I think that the state needs to make those kinds of investments, but it also needs to make investments in economic development. And that's where the other piece of what Common Ground, I think, and I really respect and appreciate the work that Common Ground has done to make Milwaukee better. But on this issue, I think there's a real fundamental misunderstanding of how development happens. It's not just about how much cash you have in the bank. It's about who's putting up money to risk it in a profit-making enterprise so that we can have economic growth and create long-term and sustainable jobs. And the way that that's done in big projects across the country in community after community is through public-private partnerships. And it's about the state putting some money up. It's about local government and county and the city putting some money up, and it's about private developers putting some money up and together trying to transform the community. And that's what the proposal is here, and it's a sensible proposal that is similar to what has happened in Oklahoma City, what happened in Indianapolis, what happened in Kansas City, in order to revitalize the downtowns and create jobs and frankly make a more vibrant community.
So, Bob, a paraphrase or a thought that I'm hearing from Sachin is a little bit the idea of this isn't just about the Buck Stadium. It's about an anchor to a fuller redevelopment in the downtown area. What sort of the interpretation of those facts from Common Ground? I mean, you guys don't see it that way. You see it as if we wanted redevelopment, we could do redevelopment without subsidizing the Buck Stadium.
Yeah, that's essentially correct. And the contention that this is the way it happens is not true. It doesn't happen that way always, and it doesn't have to happen that way always. San Francisco, the developers of the Golden State Warriors Arena in San Francisco, put up $600 million of their own money to build their arena and also to do all of the real estate department that Sachin is talking about around the arena. That's fine. I mean, they're business people, they're capitalists, they're going to make money off the deal. They're going to control the arena. They're going to get the rents from the arena. They're going to build the hotels and the restaurants around the arena, and that's fine. But they're doing it with their own $600 million in money. They don't need money from the taxpayers of Wisconsin to do what they're proposing to do. They do not need it. They don't have to have that kind of money. So, for example, one of the contentions that we've made is if I came to you for a mortgage, if I came to you for a loan, you would ask me for my financial statements. No one in this whole political debate has asked Edens or Lasry or their partners for an audit of their finances to prove that they need this kind of money before this development can occur. Our contention is they don't. We've started to look at the finances of just Mr. Edens. He owns Fortress Investments. Fortress Investments controls 31 companies. One of those companies, NationStar Mortgage, just one of the 31, made $200 million in profits last year. When you're making that kind of money, you don't need to come to the taxpayers of Wisconsin and ask them for money. The only reason they're asking them for money is that they know they can get away with it. And that's why the NBA and the NFL and the Major League Baseball teams do this in various cities. They know they can get away with it because political leaders won't stand up to them and say, we're happy to have you here, we're happy to have your development, but we're not going to subsidize you.
So and I appreciate your comment that this is sort of business as usual that perhaps has to be put a stop to. And then what happens if this doesn't go through? How important is it if the Bucks stay in Milwaukee or not? Does it matter?
Well, I don't think economically it matters. I think that's been proven over and over again around the country. I think what's at stake is politicians who don't want to be blamed for, oh, my God, the Bucks left Milwaukee. I don't think it would be a big tragedy if the Bucks leave Milwaukee. I'm not proposing that the Bucks leave Milwaukee. And I think if the politicians in this town said, no, we'll help you, but we're not going to subsidize you, that the Bucks would still stay because they see, as Sachin pointed out so well, that big piece of vacant land that they can make millions and millions of dollars in profits on.
Well, how That's are you proposing if there's an alternative statement that the government says, we'll help you, but we won't help you this way? What are the other ways that the government could support the Bucks?
They help them assemble the land. See, the biggest barrier to doing any kind of development is getting control of property.
The fun rules of zoning, yes, yes.
That land is publicly owned by the county and the city. They could put together a package to sell them the land at a reasonable price so that the taxpayers benefit and that they are able to make a reasonable profit on what they're contending to do. That's when, in effect, happened in San Francisco. The developers of the Golden State Warriors Arena got control of a huge piece of land in an undeveloped part of the city, and that's where they're doing all of their arena and real estate development.
Let me jump in with a couple things here.
Please do, Sachin. Thank you.
One of the things that Bob said is he used the word always. I just want to be clear, I didn't use the word always. And this is the kind of, you know, the political rhetoric where we change what the other side is saying. I'm really not trying to mischaracterize what Common Ground is saying. I have a lot of respect for Common Ground, and I wish that respect would be carried over mutually, because I didn't use the term always, and yet I was quoted as if I did. I said often, these are the kinds of deals, and I don't think Common Ground could disagree with that often this is what happens. So that's the first thing I'd say. Second is we're not San Francisco, and if we think that we're going to compare ourselves from a development opportunity standpoint with San Francisco, then, again, we're not starting from a place where we understand what it takes to get projects developed in a city like Milwaukee. And so I think that's a really critical understanding, that we want to be successful in Milwaukee, we want to grow the economy and create good-paying jobs, and we're only going to do that if we make the investments necessary. Third, we talked about what the owners are putting up. The owners are putting up half the cost of this arena. They're not asking for the taxpayers to cover the entire cost of it. And there is a cost to the taxpayers if we say no. And I think this dishonesty around whether there's a cost or not, we are on the hook for the liability cost for the Bradley Center. Some estimates have put that cost at $5 million a year or more for the next 20 years in terms of liability. I'm sorry, it's over 10 years. So it's $10 million a year or more over 10 years in terms of the cost to the Bradley Center, which is all subsumed into this project. Those costs don't increase. In fact, they go away, essentially, if we build the arena project. We also lose the cost of not only the Bucks players paying income taxes and all of their employees paying income taxes, but we lose the cost or the revenues generated from when LeBron James and Kevin Garnett and all the other players from around the country come and play games 40 times a year against the Bucks. And that is seen as something that over the next 20 years is already at $6.5 million and is, by some projections, going to more than double over the next 20 years. So that's the income just lost.
That's the taxes that we collect because their salaries are so high.
Right. That's what we call the jock tax. And, in fact, look, I'm a progressive, and I'm no fan of the Walker economy or what Scott Walker has done on 99% of issues. But the proposal that he originally made in his budget on funding the arena by using that revenue directly was the best proposal that we saw. And it's unfortunate the Republicans have made the proposal weaker. They have less money coming from the state and more money coming from city and county government, and they're not allocating the revenue the same way. But regardless, there's an investment that's being made, and the state actually is going to spend less money in the bill the assembly is going to vote on today. I think they're debating it on the floor right now, than they earn just from those jock taxes already in today's dollars, let alone with what we expect to see in increased revenue from the NBA over the next 20 years. So from a net cost standpoint, it is absolutely not true that there is no cost to saying no. There's a cost to saying no, and the cost is that there's less money in the state budget to pay for things like schools and the university. And if we were honest about that, we should say, okay, we want there to be, you know, a benefit that we gain from the owners. We want there to be some profit that's gained to people of Milwaukee. And I guess part of me looking at this thing is I think I have a lot of confidence that the way that Mark Lazary does business and the way that they've proposed a very comprehensive development plan in partnership with local government here in Milwaukee is very likely to result in development happening on land where it hasn't been profitable, where people haven't seen the opportunity, even though it's been 10 years, to fill that land in with productive job-creating development. And I think that, you know, the choice here is, do we say yes to moving forward, or do we say no in hopes of some better deal coming on down the line in the future, even though nobody's been able to propose what that deal would be, who would do it, where the investment would come from. And so the choice that I would make as a citizen of Milwaukee, someone who's raising my kids going to public schools in Milwaukee, is I want the investment. I want the job creation. I don't think this is a perfect deal. I wish that it were a better deal, but it's not a horrible deal. And it's one that I think will move us forward and will make Milwaukee and Wisconsin stronger.
Sachin and Bob, you just said a bunch of things that I want to parse out a little bit, but we have some calls coming in. So let's sort of pull aside on and take some calls. Craig, thank you so much for waiting. You have a question about how this is for Milwaukee and not the rest of the state?
Oh, I don't have a question. I know what it is.
Okay.
I'm a basketball fan. I like the Bucks. Okay. But, yeah. No. And this has been portrayed in the media, if at all, has been portrayed as one thing and one thing only, and that is a new arena for the Bucks. That's all it's been portrayed. And this development stuff may be happening, probably is happening, but the people of the whole state should not be financing this. Let's settle down here. These dudes are billionaires. Worse yet, they are hedge fund operators. Is there a sleazier way to make money than a hedge fund operator? Come on now. Like I said, I am a basketball fan. But this is about, and the owners are not paying half. They're kicking in $1.5 million. And Herbie Cole, the former owner, is kicking in $100 million. Do you think these two hedge fund operators would kick that in if the role was reversed? I don't think so. And like they said before, the Golden State Warriors are doing this without taxpayer money. And you go downtown Milwaukee. We were just down there last week for a concert, and my lady friend goes, "That's the building they're going to tear down?" You wouldn't believe it to see it for your eyes. The reason they want to tear it down is because there's not enough luxury boxes. And the luxury people buy, the corporations buy the tickets for the whole season. So it doesn't matter whether the Bucks win or the Bucks lose. Those tickets are sold. I'm sorry, but no. This money should not be, taxpayer money should not be going there. And plus, If they leave, these hedge fund operators stand to make $25 million, I believe, if the whole thing collapses. They know how to make money. And the Bradley Center is being occupied by the market Golden Eagles as well.
Craig, thank you so much for your comments. I appreciate you calling in, and I appreciate the enthusiasm that you're giving your thoughts on. Sachin and Bob, I wanted to sort of get your comments, specifically one of the things that Craig talked about of if we build a new arena, it's because it will have more spaces for higher-end payment. Is that the whole plan? Is that the whole thought about of the arena aspect of it, is that yes, if we don't build a new arena, they will go somewhere else where they can get the top quality arena that they want. Bob,
well,
do you want to go ahead?
If you want to sell,
sure, go ahead.
The arena is being built. The new arena is being built because the NBA told the Bucks that they have to build a new arena in order to make more money. Because the money that comes from each team goes to the NBA. So they are saying, and they've done it in other parts of the country, they've said to the Bucks, you need to build a new arena or we're going to move the team. In effect, what they do with taxpayers is when they try to pull the public subsidy, in effect, it's extortion. It's you either give us a public subsidy or we're moving the team to another city.
It's business.
And that's the reason they're building a new arena.
Sachin, go ahead.
Well, look, it's absolutely true that the NBA has indicated that they think that the Milwaukee needs a new arena and that if we don't build a new arena, that the team is going to move. And, you know, whether we like it or not, that's a fact. That's happening. And the owners have said, look, we get a new arena, or we're going to have to move the team because we don't think we can long-term sustain in the arena. I think it's much more complicated than just are there enough luxury boxes. As a user of the facility, Bradley Center, it's built in an inverted style. You have more seats in the upper bowl than the lower bowl, which is just not smart. I think there were some decisions that were made in the building of the Bradley Center that weren't the best long-term decisions, and it is one of the oldest arenas in the NBA. So the reality is that we have the opportunity to build a new arena that not only will host the Bucks, but will host the Marquette basketball team, will host concerts, will host other special events, be occupied. The math is, probably half the days of the year, generating business for the surrounding community and for spurring new development in not only hotels, but apartments and office buildings. I think this is, what we've seen to rejuvenate downtown in Kansas City. We saw it rejuvenated downtown in Indianapolis. We saw a complete renaissance in Oklahoma City around a new arena. There's all kinds of places around. And everyone keeps comparing us to San Francisco, and I love San Francisco. I try to go there a couple times a year, but we're not San Francisco. We don't have Silicon Valley down the road. We don't have the property values. We don't have the climate. There's a lot of reasons why Milwaukee's not comparable to San Francisco. I think these other, Midwestern, middle-of-the-country towns that see some arena, we're not asking the taxpayers to pay all of the cost of a new arena, but a partnership between the public and the private. There are a lot of different ways that the public and private combine together to create jobs and to spur development. When we spend public money on a new highway interchange, that spurs development. That interchange is used by people who then go to their private businesses and go to their private homes. There's a difference in degree here, but there's not a difference in the fundamental strategic idea that a public investment is sometimes worthwhile if it generates economic activity. Let me just say one more thing. There is a cost. Everybody keeps saying that there's not a cost. There is a cost to saying no. Because if the state budget has less money net, then if they say yes, then there's a cost. And that's not an issue that I can see opponents ever addressing directly. If we say no to this deal, state taxpayers will have less money, not more money, in the state budget to fund priorities. And I think that's a really critical thing to remember if we're talking about what the state should decide in whether or not to move the bill forward today.
So, first of all, can you explain that? Because I don't understand entirely what you mean by that, of there'll be less state money. I get that we'll be on the hook because we have to still pay for
the
Bradley
state
Arena.
The state is being asked to fund $4 million a year towards the new arena for the next 20 years. $500,000 of that is projected to come back to the state through the ticket surcharge of 50 cents a ticket that comes back to the state. The rest of the ticket surcharge stays in the Wisconsin Center District to pay for costs within the downtown area where the arena is being built.
But we could, Can't we create a ticket surcharge anytime we want? Can't we create a ticket surcharge so that it funds Milwaukee Public Schools? I mean, it's not like we could never put
that.
Right. So
I've said, but here's the thing. Politics is about the choices that are in front of us. I've said 100 times publicly, if somebody offered us the deal, we're going to fund Milwaukee Public Schools, we're going to fund the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, we're going to fund healthcare in Milwaukee, but we're not going to fund the arena, I would take that deal. And I'm sorry, proponents of the Bucks may not like that, but I think those are, to me, higher priorities. That's not the choice that's in front of us.
You said not accepting this budget will mean less money for school,
yes,
less money in the budget that we could spend. So that's where I need you to help me understand, because saying
right
voting
now,
a vote no on
collects,
this is less money for schools and just less money for our budget.
Yeah, so let me explain that. There's $6.5 million a year today that is generated in income taxes on players and coaches that come to Milwaukee, both from Bucks players playing home games and every away player that plays a game here in Milwaukee. So every time there's a game and Bucks players and coaches and personnel get paid to work that game. A player's salary is 181st or 182nd of the salary of their annual salary for each game is counted as being earned in Wisconsin. And every single one of those players, Bucks players and away players, pays income taxes. That adds up to $6.5 million a year. If the Bucks go away, all of that income tax revenue goes away. Not only the Bucks revenue, but the revenue from all the visiting players. Now, not only does the $6.5 million go away, but the estimated growth of $170 million over the next 20 years of additional revenue goes away. So should we spend $80 million over 20 years, $4 million, and it's actually net $3.5 million because of the ticket surcharge, in order to keep getting the $6.5 million a year we get now, plus the additional money that we would get, which is actually more than that averaged over 20 years. In addition, there's a cost to both the state and local government if the Bradley Center is left without those 40 games that the Bucks play as home games every year. And that's estimated to cost $120 million over the next 10 years, more than $10 million a year. So if we lose the Bucks, we are on the hook for over $400 million over the next 20 years. If we keep the Bucks, we're not on the hook for any of that money, and we're spending $80 million. That is an arithmetic problem,
that is,
right?
Okay.
That is the consequence of doing nothing. And that's not something that opponents have been able to address.
Bob, I want to hear your answers to this, but let's take another phone call, and then we'll have you right after that, Bob. Paul, thank you so much for waiting. Tell us your question or comment.
Hi, I have a comment. I guess fundamentally I think that the role of government is to solve problems that a profit motive alone won't solve, societal issues like feeding the hungry. Lord knows that you're not going to make millions of dollars by putting food in the mouths of poor kids or providing public education or protecting the environment or, you know, countless things. So with that backdrop, with regards to public private deals, partnerships, I'm not necessarily opposed, but it really, you need to consider the opportunity cost of the money that's being given up, because there's absolutely no way to fund, say, the DNR with private dollars, because you can't make money off of it, or public education and so forth. Whereas the Bucks, there are alternatives, as the opponent of the proposition has been saying. There's multiple alternatives. And okay, so I guess fundamentally, you know, what the pro advocate has been saying, well, we'll lose money if the Bucks go elsewhere, but you need to be the change that you want to see in the world. I think it's unnecessary to believe that we are the only people that make changes, you know, in the private. Like, the reason the developers would go elsewhere is they're giving us an ultimatum. They're saying, if you don't spend your tax dollars on us, some other city would.
Right.
And if we all the cities across America stand up for what's right and spend money on things that the private sector won't spend money on anyway, then that would never happen. So I think we just need to stand up and be, you know, more ethical people.
Thanks for your comments, Paul. And I think that fits nicely into Bob. I think Paul was echoing some of the sentiments that you have. What is sort of your response to the callers and what Sechin was just talking about?
Yeah, Paul and Sechin described the extortion really well. If you don't give us the money, we're going to move. And we'll move the state income taxes that our basketball players have and give with us. There's two problems with that. Number one, there's a lawsuit that's coming forward that is going to try to stop NBA players from being taxed on state income tax. And number two, you need to find other sources of revenue, and political leaders and economic leaders can do that, to have other sources of income that are going to be generated in our economy. You don't have to have that from sports arenas and from sports basketball players. You just don't. But that is the extortion. They know that people are afraid of losing a little bit of money in the short term if they don't build these new arenas, and that's why they leverage people. Somebody has to have the economic and moral courage to stand up to them and say, we're happy to have you in our city. You're going to make a lot of money on these teams, and you're going to make a lot of money on economic development. We're not going to subsidize you to be able to do it.
Bob,
the argument about jobs and economic development is the same argument that was made when we subsidized $1 billion to build Miller Park.
Bob, what sort of you and Common Ground's response to the idea that the mayor of Milwaukee, why am I forgetting on his Mr. Mayor Barrett, who, of course, ran against Scott Walker and is a very different political leaning than the Republican legislators in charge of our state legislature. He's very much in support of this and sees it as an economic engine. What's sort of the response of Milwaukee community leaders? That I appreciate both you and Sachin's comments, because I don't live in Milwaukee and I don't think about that sort of plot of land, and I don't think about how many people go to Bucks games or how many people don't. That's just not sort of part of my daily reality. And when the mayor of your city says this will make an economic impact, how do you guys sort of respond to that? Bob?
Well, I'll respond to that. The mayor is correct. It will have an economic impact. But the question, where we disagree with the mayor is on two points. Number one, you do not need to subsidize billion-dollar basketball owners in order to have an economic impact. They can pay for it themselves, and it'll have a great economic impact. Number two, Nation Star Mortgage in Wesley Edens needs to be, instead of taking public money, putting public money back into our neighborhoods to take care of the foreclosed, abandoned, vacant properties that Mr. Edens controls all over the city of Milwaukee. So we think that the mayor has made a mistake by supporting public subsidy money for the new Bucks Arena. We understand why he did it. He's under extreme political pressure for not being the mayor that, quote, lost the Milwaukee Bucks. We understand that kind of pressure. But somebody's got to stand up to these guys, or it's going to continue to it happens across the country, and it's going to happen here.
So while there's bipartisan support for this proposal, there's also bipartisan opposition. And Bob, I wanted to get your thoughts of this quote from Republican Representative Chris Kapenga. He's actually a senator-elect. And here was his quote that he said on NPR this morning. He said, "What happens when Johnson Controls, that's another business, comes to us or Manpower and they say, you know what, we're going to move out of state unless you guys do something about it. We've created this precedent where we're going to give $80 million to private enterprise because we want them to stay here. Where does that end?"
Yeah. Because then you're subsidized. I mean, what happened to the free enterprise system? Everybody's in favor of the free enterprise system and keeping government out of free enterprise, right? Less government, more free enterprise. Everybody's in favor of that until it happens to be something that affects their own political interests. That's in effect why the governor is supporting this proposal. So I agree with the statement that you just read.
We have one more call coming in. Sachin, go ahead.
I know you might have to go, Sachin,
thank you for staying with us as long as you can.
Yeah, no problem. I totally disagree with what Chris Kapenga said, because I'm not a conservative Republican who conveniently makes arguments against my own ideology just because it fits my political interest at that given moment. And that's something I'm pretty sure he said in the context of running for the state Senate in the special election, because there was an open seat out in Waukesha County. I actually don't have the ideological belief that government shouldn't be involved in free enterprise. I'm not a right-winger. I'm a left-winger. And I believe that public-private partnerships are a good thing and that government has a deep and comprehensive role to play in making our economic lives and our lives successful. I believe in single-payer health care. I believe in a strong public education system. I believe in a fully funded university system. Unfortunately, the politics of our state, the Walker economy, and the right-wing control means that a lot of our priorities aren't getting funded. Out of spite, people say, well, we're not funding those things, we shouldn't fund this other good project. And the reality is that this project, the support and opposition for this project don't fall along convenient ideological lines. I'm a progressive and I support this project. There are lots of conservatives who oppose it, and vice versa. What it comes down to is I want to do what's best for our economy, what's best for the people of Milwaukee, what's best for the economic growth and success and job creation here in Milwaukee. And I think it's very convenient for people to say, well, you know what, we should have a high-minded vision that there never should be public subsidy of private business, or we should have a high-minded vision that every community across the country, across the state, should not be held hostage by private businesses. Well, you know what? In the real world, that's not how things work. And there's a lot of folks in Milwaukee who need jobs. There's a lot of folks here in Milwaukee who need investment in schools, too, and investment in the university, and investment in healthcare. And every day we're fighting for all of those things. But this is the project that we can get funded today. And by funding it, we're actually saving state taxpayers money, which, again, still that question still hasn't been addressed. The only answers to that are ideological answers. But the practical answer is we would have less money for schools, less money for the university if we reject this deal. Now, is that fair?
maybe it's not fair. Maybe we shouldn't have these owners and the NBA saying we'd move this team. But this is the reality that we confront. And what the mayor's responsibility is, and what my responsibility as a citizen is to do what's best for the city of Milwaukee and my community. My kids go to Milwaukee Public Schools, which, you know, the Republicans attack day after day after day. And they're wrong about that because my kids are succeeding in successful schools. But I can fight that fight and the fight for more jobs at the same time and not worry about whether it's ideologically consistent or I'm, you know, fulfilling some sort of textbook role. And that's, I think, the real challenge if people want to grow Milwaukee and be successful is the combination of living in the real world and living by our values and our principles. I think we should do something about foreclosures, and in fact, the city extracted some new tools in this legislation so they have more capacity to take over abandoned properties that are blighting neighborhoods and that are hurting our ability to grow the tax rolls. Again, not something that opponents are talking about, but the mayor actually did something substantive in this legislation to be able to move the city forward and take some of those properties away and get them back onto the tax rolls and into homeowners' hands. So those are the kinds of real practical victories that make a difference as opposed to the ideological conversation about, you know, high-mindedness that doesn't really move Milwaukee forward and frankly frustrates those of us who are really trying to create jobs for real people here.
Sachin, I appreciate your comments, and I have a couple follow-up questions on that, but I want to get to someone that has been waiting very long. Thank you, Cheryl, so much for waiting and giving us a call. Tell us your comments or questions.
Hi. Well, everyone's touched a little bit on what I wanted to say, but when Scott Walker tells us that we are so broke that we have to gouge $833 million out of K-12 education and $250 million out of UW system, I say no. We do not have the money to give to developers who threaten to move the bucks out if we don't give in. You know, you talk about this. How great this will be for Milwaukee's economic development and jobs. But, you know, lots of jobs have been lost over here when the money was taken away from education. And if these developers are so interested in Milwaukee and concerned about Milwaukee's economic development and job creation, why are they threatening to take the bucks away? Why is that the scheme, why, as people have already mentioned, why is that the system for NBA teams,
well,
sports
and,
teams in general?
And how can we, sort of building off your comments and questions a little bit, how can we guarantee that the money that's being saved, that we're not draining from the state budget, actually goes towards things that we believe they should go towards? Is that a concern as well? Bob, we haven't
exactly
heard from you in a while. Tell us your sort of thoughts. Thank you so much for your comments and waiting so long, Cheryl. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, you could, yeah, that's an interesting question. You could say to the bucks, all the taxes that your schemes are going to generate will go to public education. I don't think anybody's put that into the deal if they stay. They're going to use the money any way they want to, and the tax money that they will generate if they stay will whatever the legislature and the governor decide to use it for. There's no designation of where that money can go and how that money can be used, other than maybe the $2 tax on the tickets. But the income tax can't be controlled and designated for any specific thing that that it can be used for.
I think this might be a place, Bob, that you and I agree. I think it would be great. I think it would be wonderful if we could have a legislature that fully funded public education, that reinvested in the University of Wisconsin system, that took the federal money and invested in health care. It'd be great if we had a state government that hadn't turned away the money for the high-speed rail. I think it'd be great if we put less money into prisons and more money into education. We actually agree on all these things, and I think there's broad agreement. But the reality is that we have a legislature that is completely disconnected from reality. Right, we have a legislature that doesn't need to get a majority of the votes to hold a majority of the seats because of partisan gerrymandering and redistricting, which is another issue we're working on. We have a legislature and a governor who are controlled by a presidential campaign trying to attract deeply right-wing votes as opposed to mainstream votes and the votes of the majority of voters. Now, that's the difference between reality and what we want. What we want is a better deal. But because we can't get a better deal, it would be spiteful to say, well, let's not even take the deal that we can get. On this issue, we can get a good deal.
How
We're
about
not
the
going to
idea...
get a better deal on education, whether we pass this deal or not. So let's go fight for education the only way we can, which is try to get a majority of seats in the legislature with pro-education candidates. That's separate from the conversation we're having today, which is, can we move this deal forward and help grow the economy in Milwaukee?
You know, one of the things that someone that's here in Madison that follows local political issues and statewide political issues as they come out of the Capitol is that this is genuinely bipartisan. The Republicans don't have enough votes. They need bipartisan support. There's also bipartisan opposition. But here was a chance for conversation to sort of maybe build some of that more in, which where there is common ground. I think Sachin, Bob, and I, any given day, would probably all be powwowing on the same union rights and labor rights and school access and all of these excellent things. And have we sort of missed an opportunity to leverage more? Or, Bob, can you tell us a little bit about the conversations of there has been, Sachin made a reference to things that were added into this bill do help housing.
Well, you know, I would disagree that this is a good deal that we can get. Let's understand something. These things happen because of money. So the number one reason that Scott Walker is agreeing to support this project and this deal and using public money for the arena versus the other things he could be spending public money on is because the people that are behind this project locally contribute significantly to his campaigns. So please understand that that's probably the greatest motivation to putting public money into this deal. John Hammes and Michael Grebe and Ted Kellner are some of the largest contributors to Governor Walker historically, are right now, and will be in his presidential campaign. And these gentlemen are behind this deal. They've been supporting this deal. They want this deal and will personally make a boatload of money on this deal.
So we only have
it's not about ideology. It's about money.
We only have a few minutes left. So I want to get – there was a question that came in via email that wanted more directed towards you, Sachin, to ask sort of can you – elaborate on the job creation. How is it just short-term job creation because we're going to be building a new stadium, or do you feel like there's more substance to that?
Yes, a little bit. I'd love to address that question directly because it belies a fundamental misunderstanding of how an economy grows. When I hear the word just, it's just short-term jobs, or you know, there's going to be more substantive jobs. Let me tell you, every construction job is by its nature a temporary job. But if we want to grow an economy, we have to build things. And those are all fully unionized labor jobs from the building trades and the construction trades. And all they do are quote-unquote temporary jobs. That's what they do. That's what an iron worker does. That's what an operating engineer does. That's what a laborer does. If you're in one of those unions, if you're a carpenter, if you're an electrician, every job is by nature a temporary job. It's a complete misunderstanding to define temporary construction jobs as anything less than a real job. That's what jobs are. We invest in projects so we can build things. And if we build the arena and then we end up building building after building after building around the arena, that creates more and more construction jobs. That's what development is. And in an urban setting, that is what you want. And that is what our community thrives on. So, yeah, it'd be great if every job was a manufacturing job and we didn't need to rely on construction jobs, but that's just not the way the real world works. So a lot of the jobs that we're creating here are construction jobs. Now, there's also permanent jobs. There's 750 jobs that are either directly or indirectly currently attributable to the Bucks in terms of their own employees or the jobs that they directly support. And that number is going to grow substantially when we think about all of the development. Let me also address a similar question that hasn't been specifically raised, which is that we could theoretically spend our entertainment dollars on something else. Well, the facts are that for people who live in Milwaukee, that may well be true. But sports teams draw from a much larger universe than things like restaurants. And hotels only work if people come from far enough away that they need to stay overnight. And we have built a few new hotels in Wisconsin, I'm sorry, in Milwaukee recently, because we're growing our attraction rate, right?
Do you think more people will come and people will be coming? I do go to a Brewers game about once or twice a year. I've never been to a Bucks game. I never take my kids to a Bucks game. It's never even crossed my mind. Do you think people in Madison and throughout the state will come to Bucks games if there's a new stadium?
Yeah, or they might come to another event at the new stadium that they can accommodate a better ticket at a better price than what they can do at the Bradley Center because the lower bowl is so small. They might come to an exciting new restaurant. They might get a job at an associated office building as the economy grows here. You know, look, I'm no fan of John Hammes's politics. But there's also a bunch of Democrats who own stuff here, too. So we want to talk about, you know, all the different people who might be attracted. I think people across the board, not everything has to be political. A lot of different people can make money on this deal, and a lot of different people can benefit from this deal. I think that we're going to see a project that has really good wages. I don't think we're going to see $7.25 an hour jobs here. I think we're going to see jobs that pay $12, $13, $15 an hour. And I think we're going to see a vision of engagement with the community because of the leadership of the people who own the Bucks. That's a totally different from what we've seen in the past. And I think that I'm a little bit of this is on faith. Just like people are operating on ideology and faith in their opposition, I'm operating a little bit on faith in my support here because I think building things is a good idea. And I think growing the economy and filling in vacant space downtown is a good idea. Well, and that's at the end of the day, the deal is good enough to move the ball forward.
I have breaking news, gentlemen, and as our show is winding down, the Assembly has voted and it passed. So the Assembly just passed the Bucks deal. They voted for the bill as it passed the Senate. So there are no amendments that need to happen. It goes straight to Governor Walker's desk. So maybe perhaps we could have Bob and Sachin or other individuals on in the future to sort of talk about, okay, it passed. Now how do we hold them to the fire and ensure that we do have good jobs that pay the higher dollar amounts? I want to believe everything you're saying, Sachin. And so how do we make that happen in the future? Bob, in the final seconds here, what's sort of the next moves from Common Ground then?
Well, it still has to be voted on by the Milwaukee Common Council.
Okay.
And that'll probably take place in September. We'll be there.
There's still things to do. Well, thank you both so much, Sachin Chetta, Bob Connolly. Thank you both for joining us and being passionate and articulate about your different positions. And I appreciate both of you for your advocacy.
You're welcome. Thank you, Carousel. Thank you, Bob. Great discussion.
So that brings us to the end of this great discussion. I want to thank Kathy for answering the phone calls today.